I'm sitting on this chair right now, and this chair in the podcast studio is going to creak a lot. I don't know who was sitting on this thing last. I think I'm the biggest guy that works here at Fieldcraft North Carolina. So if you hear a bunch of creaking, that's what that is. It's not my bones, you know, even though I am a middle-aged man. Guys, this is the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm Kevin Estella. I'm going to be your host for this episode. I'm here in Aberdeen, North Carolina at the headquarters for Fieldcraft Training. I am drinking coffee. I am highly caffeinated. And I'm on the phone with a very good friend of mine who I'm going to introduce in just a bit. I'll say that I'm currently wearing one of his holsters. And, you know, years ago, I mean, this is pre-Fieldcraft. This is, let's see, I'm trying to think the first time that I actually worked with this gentleman to carry his holsters into the great outdoors. It goes back to at least 2019, to a trip I took to Alaska where, you know, I had a chest rig that held a SIG 220 with a weapon mounted light. And I have another holster that I carried out there from him with, for my Ruger Blackhawk, you know. And then since then, you know, Harvey's been my go-to guy at Black Point Tactical. And when I'm like, hey, Harvey, I'm running this class. I need a weapon mounted light holster for, you know, like a Glock 17 or whatever. And before I can even say like, okay, where can I send payment? Next thing you know, Harvey has got it in the mail and he's like, check this tracking number. And I'm like, oh dear God. But honestly, like when people ask me, what's my recommendation for holsters, you know, Fieldcraft sells holsters, we sell holsters, but we don't always have the holsters that the outdoorsman needs, right? Like chest rig holsters that I've worn skiing and I've worn on ATVs and snowmobiles. And we don't have holsters that are weapon mounted light holsters. So I go to my guy, Harvey. And Harvey's been a good friend. He's a tribe guy. So if you guys know my lineage with SIOC and training with, you know, Rapier and all those guys, you know, he's in that circle of just good guys you can trust. And he's going to join me today because he's got a really interesting story of how he started. And kind of like me, he's a training junkie. And his company started out of a need to make money to keep training, which I think a lot of us go through when you're like, damn, I want to train with that guy, but it's like a $400 course. And you know, how can you create a side hustle to pay for your training? Well, I'm not going to steal his thunder. I'm going to let him talk about it. So guys, with me on the podcast today is Harvey Cheek from Black Point Tactical. Harvey, how you doing, buddy?
I am great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And I appreciate the heck out of you taking this call in your car. Guys, if you're listening, you know, there's something you should know is like, if you're on the podcast with us, like sometimes we got to make sure that we always have to make sure that the audio is good. And sometimes a guest is in a room where it echoes and Harvey's like, oh, I'll just do it in my car. So he's sitting in his car right now. He probably has coffee at the ready. He probably has a handgun on the passenger seat. I'm just guessing these things, but he's doing this for you guys. Just throwing that out there. He's doing it for you. So I'm doing really, really well, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
What do you got planned for this week? Before we get into your backstory, I know that you guys are constantly grinding. You're constantly building stuff. Like, what's the typical week like at Black Point Tactical?
Let's see. Typical week, we're focused just on production, new product development, a little bit of marketing, but mostly production, getting everyone the quality holsters they've come to expect from us and just maximizing that to the best of our ability.
And now let's talk about that holster design process. I mean, I'm not going to give away anything proprietary because you guys do it very differently than I've seen other people and other than I've done made holsters, right? Like you do it a very different way, not giving that away. Mm-hmm. But how did you guys get started? Because I alluded to it earlier that you needed to get into the training world more and more. And next thing you know, it exploded.
Right. So we got started, Adam and Tyler and I, and we were all roommates at Georgia Tech. And we were all just turning 21. We'd all been shooting. We were starting to carry pistols around. And naturally, as we started to do that, we started to train. And we realized our holsters, I won't name specifics, but the holsters we were using were inadequate for what we were trying to do. So we kind of checked the markets, see what was all available, and couldn't really find anything at a reasonable lead time that we thought would be sufficient. So we figured we're young, enterprising guys. Let's try to make our own holsters just in our kitchen here for our own personal use. So we ordered like one of those little DIY Kydex kits. And we started pressing holsters in our kitchen, cutting them on a bandsaw in our living room. And then we would take them around to just people we knew at gun stores, just figuring they knew a little more about it than we did. And they'd kind of critique them till they got to a point that we felt comfortable carrying them. And then somehow within a few weeks of doing this, we met a retired fifth group guy that he and a few other gentlemen were teaching courses in Augusta, seemingly every weekend. And we would go to those courses, we'd bring product, we'd get feedback, we'd sell them. And it turned into, we were producing as many as we could. It was probably like 20 holsters, so not very impressive, mm-hmm. All week during school. And then we'd take them to these training classes, we'd shoot, and then we'd sell holsters on the side. And then that's kind of what we were doing seemingly every weekend. It was probably every other weekend for the first 6 months. And then that was coming upon time to graduate. And we all had other jobs and internships that we were kind of slated to go into. But we figured, let's take the risk now. Let's jump out on a limb. And we started making holsters in Adam's grandmother's basement, which was a great time because we had an excellent meal plan. And that for about 6 months until we got machinery that we could no longer run in the basement. And then we got a quarter of a suite near where we are now in Alpharetta, or in the same building we are now in Alpharetta. And then that turned into one suite. And then now we're in five.
My God. Yeah. You know, I don't think people appreciate the stench that Kydex makes when you bake it indoors. Like, I've only screwed around a little bit with Kydex. Like, I made a handful of knife sheaths and holsters and trigger guards and things like that. But if you don't do it right, like, that stuff stinks.
Yeah. If you get too hot, it'll get melty on you.
What are some of the kind of like the embarrassing lessons learned? Because there are people out there that want to do it yourself, right? And I mean, I'm sure at some point someone is going to criticize and say, well, Black Point holsters are really expensive, but a lot of things are expensive. And I get it. People want to do it yourself. And I encourage that. You know, I would want someone to learn how to make their own gear if it can save them some money. I mean, I don't think they're going to reach the same quality as yours right off the bat. Maybe they'll learn. But what are some of the do-it-yourself kind of lessons that were learned the hard way when it comes to working with Kydex?
Figuring out the heating initially, that took us a little bit. Once we had that, initially we were template cutting everything. We were just cutting it on a saw and we were tracing a template. And you can do a few holsters like that, but you can't make them all the same. So if you made five, they'd all be a little different, even though you're tracing them and molding them off all the same thing. And then the other thing is the amount of blocking and handwork we do before we mold the holsters. Mm-hmm. That makes them so that the lockup's better, and then we have to do less final fitting than you would necessarily need to do, which makes the overall product look better. It makes your lockup more uniform. It makes everything look better. And then one of the last things is we final fit and QC every single holster with real guns, real lights, real everything. So it ensures that whatever someone has or whatever gun they're carrying around, it will work with the real firearm.
You know, that blocking process for those that might be like, well, what the heck's blocking? It's when you are building out the mold, the shape. And when you look at, say, like right now, I've got a Glock 17 in my hand and it's got a weapon light, right? It's got a TLR1. Well, if you look at like where the activation switches are on that, you got to realize that's got to go into the holster. It's got to come out of the holster through a channel. And the same thing with the front sight, right? Like, back in the day when I was doing leather holsters, I made this awesome leather holster. I'm like, man, this thing's so cool. It's so cool. And then I put it in the holster and I had a hard time extracting it because the front sight kept grabbing on the leather. So the blocking process is creating like a channel, like using like wooden dowels and different, you know, pieces of material to build the correct shape that goes into the mold. And then when you say like testing it with an actual gun, with actual lights, like, that's a sizable investment to have, you know, well, I've got the Surefire light, you know, and then I've got the Stream light, and then I've got the, you know, what other brands are out there? I'm trying to think of off the top of my head, Cloud Defense and, you know, all these.
Olight's been popular lately.
Olight's like, you've got to have like a stable of all these like weapon lights and accessories and guns and whatnot. So, you know, for the person that's thinking like, oh, I'm just going to make holsters. Well, do you have access to the actual firearm, or are you just going to go out on a limb and, you know, throw it out there to your customer and say, hey, maybe this will work. Let me know if it doesn't. That's not good business, man.
That's always a bad feeling if you have to do that.
Right. Yeah. And then what about in that cutting out process? Because I know when you cut Kydex, you know, it's instead of sawdust, you have all this like plastic residue. And if you do it long enough, your arm hair looks like you've just turned into a mutant with like crazy capability. Like, what kind of danger or risk is there with all of that. Like, I mean, you guys have a whole, when I visited you, you had a whole bunch of like ventilation issues, or not issues, but like, is it remediation? Like you had methods to get rid of the bad stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. On the cutting, it's not too bad. It pretty much just chips. And that's the same as any wood dust. And then on the sanding aspect, where we kind of remove material and then really fine tune everything down to where when you grab your gun out of your holster, your finger's not hitting the trigger guard. Your edges match up. Everything looks clean and the Kydex is soft and it doesn't have any sharp edges. Mm-hmm. We do all that just hand sanding with like Dremel attachments. And that's where everyone gets, like you mentioned, they get all the Kydex all over their arms and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, we have a huge ventilation system and all the guys wear proper PPE, but it's essentially just like you would do with wood and wood dust.
Approximately what year is this now that you're like taking courses and selling like about 20 holsters on the side?
That was, I guess that was 2011. Our official start was January 2012.
Okay. And then what do you think your next big break was? Like, obviously guys are going to start using your holsters. Word of mouth is going to happen. You're breaking into the holster industry when, like, I think about like as a kid or teenager, when I was like, man, I can't wait to get my first handgun. I remember seeing catalogs with like Galco and Bianchi and then DeSantis gun leather. And it seems like those are the big leather companies. And then there was Blade Tech, right? Like Blade Tech was like, you know, cat's ass in the 90s and the 2000s. Yeah. When do you feel like you hit your next break where it was like, you knew you were making it, where people started mentioning your name among the big holster companies that were established for decades already?
Right. Let's see, that was probably, I think these two things kind of happened simultaneously, but when we got on with SIG early on, I think we've been on with SIG for 6 or 7 years now, doing, I think we're on our third holster design with them. Mm-hmm. And that one kind of gave us some legitimacy. And then starting to work with instructors like Bill and yourself and just professionals that are kind of vouching for our products.
Yeah, because at SIG Sauer, and it works out great because they're one of our sponsors. At SIG, when you go and you go to the training academy, you can rent firearms. Like people don't realize that you can go to the SIG Sauer Academy and say, look, I don't want to fly with a firearm. Can I rent one when I go there? And they're usually going to hand you, if it's a pistol class, I mean, you can rent pretty much anything. The only one I don't think they let you rent is like the 210, which is just like such an elegant firearm. But they'll give you like a 320. And they'll give you a holster. And usually that holster is like the SIG coloring. So I think it's like gray and red, right? Like that's, yeah. So, and that lets you know that you're using a loaner, right? And same thing with like the rifles. When you go up there and you borrow a rifle for a carbine class, all the loaner rifles have blaze orange slings. So, you know, students aren't accidentally, you know, walking off with one by accident, you know? So you started working with SIG. And then I know, like when you go to the pro shop now, you know, you can find Black Point Tactical holsters in the SIG pro shop. What was the best seller? You know, was it your line of holsters for like the 365, or, you know, was it for their classic line or 320? Like what seems to be like the hot product up there?
Well, now it would be the X Macro. Mm-hmm. Before that, definitely the 365. And then, I mean, before that, we were doing 229s, 226s before the 365s were out.
Which is go ahead.
The 365s were huge when those came out. And then the X Macros now are every bit as big.
Yeah, I know, you know, Mike Lover posted recently that he's got a Black Point holster for his X Macro because no one was making holsters for them when they first came out, you know? Right. And it seems like you guys kind of got out there ahead of the pack. You know, one of the distinct characteristics of your holsters is that, you know, many of them have bridle leather as like a wing feature. Can you kind of talk about the reason behind that versus say like a hard plastic wing to kind of push it from the body?
Absolutely. So initially when we were started, we were trying to figure out, we had our just all Kydex OWB, which is still on our site. It's called our standard OWB. And that's like a good firm rigid holster, but we couldn't figure out how to mod that holster to be able to work on a woman's hip. So we kind of went after this problem for a few weeks and months and then started attaching these leather wings to the outside of the holster to give it a flex so that it would work with anybody. And we found that to be just hugely comfortable for women.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started wearing them and we're like, man, these are awesome. Maybe it'll work for everybody. So that's kind of how our leather wing was born. And then our mini wing is just an adaptation of that, just on a smaller scale, because you don't need the top attachment points for a belt loop.
You know, it's funny that you say that, you know, you designed a product for women and then you're like, well, let's try it out. And then like all the guys started wearing it. I can think throughout history of just like living in the outdoor space and working in this industry, you know, Smith & Wesson came out with the Ladysmith pistol, and you would think like, oh, Ladysmith, like, oh, it's going to be for women. But I know a lot of guys that carried the Ladysmith. They're like, hey, it's a really comfortable, you know, they would refer to it as like a belly gun, or, you know, it's a super lightweight gun. And, you know, it's a puppy dog when you load it with 38 specials, you know? So there was a product originally designed for women that men started carrying. And then now a defunct company called Lotus Designs used to make a life jacket that was based off of a wedding dress. And I think it was called the Lola. And guys started wearing it and they're like, man, you know, I'm not thinking that these guys wore wedding dresses, but if it worked for a woman's physique, and if it was meant to mold really well to a woman's physique, why couldn't it work for a man's? Now watch, a whole bunch of dudes in the tactical space are going to start wearing like women's leggings. You know, we do have Fieldcraft leggings, by the way, but gentlemen, please don't wear them. They're not for you. So now the other thing that you guys are known for, other than the leather, which, you know, I will swear by that, by the way, that the bridle leather wears like iron, and it does help the holster hug your body without feeling like it's like a big block on your waistline. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that you guys started using, I don't remember when you started using them, was the discrete carry concept clips that Matt makes.
Oh yeah. So he completely changed the game with those.
Can we talk about that? Cause I mean, it's such an overlooked aspect of a holster. Like, there's still so many junk holsters out there that are junk because they use plastic clips. Like, maybe the holster body is great, but the fact that they put plastic on there, which can break off and it's just not as durable as Matt's stuff, I mean, it's a junk holster. So when did you start using those, and how are you using them?
I think we started using them right when he came out with them, because we had some other metal clips which work well. We still offer them, but they don't have the strength and the clamping pressure that these do. We use them, I think you can use them on all of our holsters. Make sure I'm right before, except the Outback, obviously, which is chest mounted, but they're great. We use them. I carry them on my mini wing. We use them on all of our blade sheaths.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to wear your gun securely without ever any concern of it coming off. You can wear them without a belt, assuming your whatever waist strap you have can hold up your gun. But even on sheaths, like, you don't need a belt anymore for your sheaths to get it to retain completely. I wouldn't necessarily advocate that, but
right,
for girls that just wear leggings around, you can absolutely just carry a blade with those DCC clips, and then they're locked on. The service finish is awesome. I have some we've been carrying for 5 and 7 years, and they still look great. A little bit of wear on them, but they still look and function beautifully.
Yeah, Matt, people don't realize he's a metallurgist, and when he decided to design those clips, he did all these different variations of metal, and, you know, he's got a couple in his lineup that are called like the heavy, which, I mean, mm-hmm. It's basically a fixed loop. I mean, you could pull the clip apart, you know, if you've got some man hands, but it has like a 200 pound tension on the clip, and it doesn't weigh anything else. Like, it doesn't weigh anything more than the standard ones. So if you wanted something that's definitely not coming off, like if you wanted to rig that one to like a plate carrier or whatever, I mean, that's the way to go. Go with the heavy. But those clips, man, like, I'm the guy when I go on a trip, and I go, and if I'm staying at a hotel or whatever, I'll carry my pistol and a flashlight with me down to the pool. Like, if I'm going to go, you know, just sit out or, you know, go somewhere, I always have the gun with me in a hotel. I get these weird vibes from like Mumbai, you know, when they had that terrorist attack in Mumbai, and I'm like, not today, ISIS. So, you know, I'll put one of your holsters in my waistband with a pair of board shorts on, and it never goes anywhere, you know, and I'm not swimming with it, but like when I get down to the pool, I'll go into the bathroom and I'll put it in my towel, and, you know, I'll be safer there. So no one can see me taking out a gun as I'm in the swimming pool. But, you know, that right there is a testament. Like, I can wear it in the summertime with board shorts on. you know, you can clip it, like I said, just about anywhere. And like you said, the only one that's not utilizing those clips is your Outback, which we should talk about. So the Outback holster, can you kind of just give like a little bit of a rundown of how it works, what it's meant for, and then I'll give my background with it?
Absolutely. That one started as trying to find another carry solution for when you're hiking, or if you're fly fishing and you have chest waders on, or if you're skiing and you're wearing bib pants or something like that. Mm-hmm. I've even had people wear them running.
Yeah.
it just gives you a higher mounted option to be able to carry your pistol on your chest. The strap has bungee in it. It's made out of the Blue Force gear material, so it's extremely durable. And it's just a very low profile way to carry a pistol on your chest for long periods of time and it'd be comfortable.
Yeah, I like that the straps are like only an inch wide. And I've had people say, well, I wish the straps were thicker. I'm like, well, then you've never hiked in the desert. Because when you have super thick straps and you're already wearing a backpack, it gets really hot on your shoulders. And it doesn't seem like a 2-inch wide strap would get hot until you wear a 2-inch wide strap. And then you add on the backpack strap. And then you realize like you have all this extra bulk. So if you're packing into the backcountry or traveling, now you've got to, you know, have a lot more fabric that you've got to get into your Pelican case. So I actually like the minimalist stuff better. And you don't need a 2-inch wide strap to hold a Glock 17. You know, my Outback, I've got one for my 17, and then you sent me one for my Red Hawk. And between those two, I've never had an issue with it feeling uncomfortable, because, you know, when it's on your collarbones and it's riding on your shoulders and you got that backpack, the backpack kind of like locks it in place. And when you've got a hip belt, this just came up in our bug out planning class that we did this past weekend. I said, if you're wearing a pistol under a flannel shirt and you've got a backpack on with a hip belt, and now you've got to get to your pistol, which you're carrying appendix, you've got to ditch your hip belt. You got to take off, you know, or remove the cover garment or clear the cover garment and then get to your pistol. Or you could carry it in a chest mounted rig and it's not in the way of any of that stuff. Man, I swear by those holsters. And, you know, having that ability to keep your waistline clean when you're wearing a backpack is a game changer. And then when you're riding, like if you're doing long distance drives, I don't know how many guys do this, but you take off your holster and you put it in your center console that you can lock up or whatever when you're driving. And it's like, I just don't want that thing digging me all day. But you can wear a chest holster pretty comfortably the entire day. So I swear by those things, man. What's the biggest handgun you've put in that Outback?
We did them for a Colt and a Conda one time. Obviously, we did your Red Hawk. Mm-hmm. The Glock 40s are pretty big. The new, that 5-inch, 10 mil 220 that Sig came out with, the Hunter one, mm-hmm. those are pretty big. And then most of those you can light mount, minus the revolvers. So you have a Glock 40 or that Sig Hunter with a X300 on it. That's a pretty beefy setup.
Yeah, I actually sold my Sig Hunter that I took to Alaska and I gave the guy the holster. You know, the 10 mil is great and I love it, but it was just a gun that I didn't need at the time. And I know people are going to be like, oh, he sold a gun. And there are people that never sell guns, but I don't know. I'm weird like that. If it doesn't serve me a purpose in that moment, I'll sell it and I can always get something later on. And I think I talked to you when I was in the process of selling that and I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking maybe I'll get a Glock 20 and 10 mil and have 15 plus one 10 mil rounds instead of 8 plus 1. But have you ever done a chest rig for someone where you're like, they want this for a North American Arms Mini? Like, is there like a size where you're like, I'm not doing that chest rig. That's too much support for too little of a pistol.
Let's see. We've done 365s, Glock 43s. Mm-hmm. We do those semi-regular and I just assume that they're going to try and run with it.
Right.
So who am I to tell them not to, yeah. Like, we'll build it for you. I'm not going to tell them how they need to carry their tools around.
Yeah. My buddy, Mike O'Brien, who's probably listening to this, Mike O'Brien runs Fly Fish With Me Utah, and he's done a bunch of stuff for Fieldcraft. He's a solid, solid guy. And he's got one of your holsters for a 365 and he wears it underneath like your typical fishing shirt, you know, like a sun shirt. Mm-hmm. And he'll put a pair of waders on and you cannot tell that he has a pistol mounted right there. Like it easily conceals in that little hollow, you know, between your pecs or your boobs if you're, you know, fat. So yeah, he swears by his. And I really think It's a necessary way of carrying if you're not able to carry on the waistline.
Right.
We are in the works in coming up with a new design, but we have to be real careful talking about this one. And it's not a design for anything other than a survival pistol. I'm going to speak in such, you know, vagueness here. So we've got a design for a survival pistol holster, and survival pistol, that's like a 22, like a Ruger Mark II, a Browning Buck Mark. And I reached out to you and I was like, hey, Harvey, you know, there's really not a solution for the survival pistol when you get to camp and you've already got a gun on. And I think this option, which we're just going to call option X, is the way to go. And sure enough, within a couple of weeks, you're like, well, what are your thoughts on it? And we went back and forth with sketches, and you sent me one initially, and I tried it out, and I sent you back something else. And the next thing you know, I see a CAD image, and I'm like, oh boy, we're coming close to this thing. But what do you want to give away? I think I've already given away a lot.
Let's see. The holster design of it, I think we're getting pretty close. We made a new tweak on the latest iteration, mm-hmm. but it's a small tweak. And then now we're just figuring out the attachment method. Hopefully we'll get that hammered down this week and next week after a few back and forths. And then hopefully we'll be ready to go to market soon.
Yeah. You know, I think it really does fit a demand, because I've seen some of the options that are out there, and some of the options that are out there look like they're meant for race guns, you know, like competition pistols. They're designed to be carried a certain way. And some of the options that are out there are not suppressor friendly. So I tried this one with two different suppressors, and it cleared no problem. So if you want to carry a 22 suppressed and, you know, do some cool hunting, if you want to call it that, then this is going to work out just fine. But I really cannot wait to carry my Buckmark in that, because it is a solution to a problem that actually exists, as opposed to a lot of the stuff that's out there where, you know, people are like, oh, they just made this and they tweaked it another way. Or it's the holster of the week club, right? Like, oh, they made this holster slightly different, kind of like the Apple iPhone, you know, and they're just trying to, you know, crank money out of the customer. But in this case, I don't think there's anything like it. And I showed it to a few of our close associates, and they're all like, yes, uh-huh. And they just got it. It made sense to them. Do you have any other kind of projects in the works that you can kind of talk about, but don't want to give away completely?
Yeah. I mean, we always have several that we're working on. Some of them have a shorter time span. Some of them have a longer time span. We're always working on new sheath stuff. That's exciting. I don't know. Several of the other ones I can't talk. They're not close enough to be able to talk about yet.
You said sheaths. We should talk about the sheaths that you do make. So you guys are making the sheaths for Amtac blades.
Correct.
And have you been approached by any other companies, or is it strictly Bill's?
We strictly work with Bill right now.
Yeah. I think
we're open to making anything else, but we strictly work with him right now.
Yeah. I think some companies, if you guys are listening, you're a knife maker, you might want to reach out to Black Point. I think there's a huge knife making guild in Georgia, and many of those knife makers provide knives without sheaths. And there's got to be a solution for like a 90% version of a sheath that you can sell someone that will like fit a certain size knife, where all they have to do is then just use a heat gun and do the final treatment around the handle. You know, just another idea. But if you guys are listening and you're making knives, reach out to Black Point. All right. So now, something that's really big that's on the horizon for you guys is you've gotten to this point where Sig Sauer is carrying your products. You are no longer making things in your friend's grandmother's basement, which I think is hilarious. And now you're occupying a space, and then you start expanding. Can you kind of talk through that process of that decision-making when it comes to business? Because I think people expand too soon and then they get in over their head. And you guys have been very cautious and careful and very smart with your growth plan. So for people who are listening that are fellow entrepreneurs, how would you recommend to make that decision to grow out of that space into another one? And like, what are some of the issues that happen when you are renting space and now you have to pay this lease? And, you know, like, can you kind of talk us through that? Like, what you and your business partners have, you know, discovered?
Absolutely. And even more than space is adding people.
Oh yeah, please.
Space you can get out of easy, and you're not impacting anyone's livelihood or their family.
Mm-hmm.
But once you bring on people, That was one of our biggest hurdles on our initial start, was when we had too much work that the three of us couldn't manage it on our own. And getting our first our first employee and then our first few, that was one of our bigger, like, we're responsible for other people now decisions.
Who was your, no, well, not by name, but like, what role did that first employee fill? Was it social media? Was it shipping? Was it fabrication?
Oh, no, it was manufacturing. We started.
You're like, what the hell is this social media thing, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that was, Instagram was just starting then.
Yeah.
It was just strictly manufacturing. And he's with us to this day, runs our molding department. You met him when you were here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a really great team now. We have about 27 people, including us, and we're growing, looking to get a few more on soon. So that's kind of the people aspect. That's one of the more exciting aspects, is you're able to, one, work with great people, and then two, kind of provide jobs for people outside of ourselves. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And in terms of just sweet business expansion, I mentioned before we started a third of a unit, and then we got one full unit, and we thought that would last us forever. And then the suite, we're in a suited like warehouse building, so kind of adding is easier than it would be if you were in a standalone.
Mm-hmm.
So then the one next door to us came up for lease, and I think it had a 1 year. We could pick it up for 1 year. So then we kind of ran the numbers on it, figured it out. And then we took that one over. And then we started another brand called Crucial Concealment, which the goal of that one is we build as many features into the holster as possible, but everything is built to stock. So that way for dealers and customers that need something right now, they ship same week. Usually same day, but sometimes we get stocked out in the same week.
So Crucial Concealment then is more for like, if a guy just goes to say like Dick's gun store right here and he picks up a Glock 19 and it's like, oh, here's a holster, Glock 19, as opposed to,
correct,
you know, hey, I need a custom holster, Glock 19. I've got a Surefire X300 on it. And, you know, I've got a Trigicon RMR on it. You know, like it's not so customizable. It's just bare bones, right?
Absolutely. And we're still building like full quality holsters. We're still using all the same materials.
Mm-hmm.
We're just generic making everything with the most number of specifications we can build into the holster, so that we're not custom hand making every single one like we are on the Black Point side. Because that one, every single holster is unique. Rarely do two people ever order the same thing.
Were there any issues when you branched off and you created Crucial Concealment? I mean, like, You already have name recognition as Black Point. Did anyone ever question, or were there any issues where people were like, this is a ripoff of Black Point Tactical or anything like that?
Right. Fortunately, from the beginning, we haven't been secretive about that it is our sister company and that we are doing all the work and all the manufacturing of it. So we weren't trying to keep it a secret, but we did want to create brand differentiation for dealers and customers, just so you don't see a holster on our Black Point site that's slightly cheaper and then be like, well, why is that? Is it not as good or anything like that? So we just wanted to differentiate, so that one was a more streamlined manufacturing process, and then one is like the Black Point site, everything's still completely handmade.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now that was what, roughly 2018? Because you guys just came out with those, right?
Yes.
So 2018?
Yeah, I think 2018 sounds about right.
Okay. So 2011, you guys are getting up off the ground. 2013 or so, that's when SIG is picking you up, right?
I think it was a little after. It might have been 14 or 15, but around there.
Okay, so about 3 years grinding, you know, quite literally and figuratively grinding. Mm-hmm. And then 2018, you grow large enough where you want to create a separate company. But now you're at a phase which is getting really exciting, because a major manufacturer that I've used for years, I know you've used it, and a lot of listeners have used it, they're acquiring you guys, right? That's HSGI.
Correct.
So how did that happen? Like, kind of walk me through like maybe the pucker factor of when you get the phone call or the email that says, hey, by the way, we're interested in acquiring you. Like, just can you go through like with what you can share? Like, what is that like when you get that message? Where were you, and what's running through your head?
Yeah, they're someone that we've known for years, maybe 4 or 5 years. And we've always been in kind of loose conversations with them and just friends within the industry with them. And then we've seen them grow over that period, and they've seen us grow. So we have nothing but mutual respect for one another. And then lately, it's just made sense for both of us to kind of partner up, because there's things that we can bring to their companies and things that they can bring to us, and really just help us all grow exponentially.
And now, where were you when you got that call? I didn't hear all these details. Like
I assume I was here at the shop, because that's pretty much where I am all the time. So I assume I was here at the shop, and it's been, I don't know, it's probably been a year long to eight month process to get everything finalized and everything like that. But now I think SHOT Show was the announcement and everything. They have an excellent team that we are very excited to work with. They bring a lot of value to us. We bring value to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to see where this venture takes us, just because their stitching operation is incredible. Like, what they're able to do there is, it's incredible.
I mean, I've seen some of the stuff that they have at SIG, you know, and I know a bunch of our instructors run, you know, the tacos. And just looking at what they're able to stitch through, like how many layers of Cordura and heavy nylon, like it is pretty impressive. What will that mean for your holsters and like what you can offer?
It really just opens us up to more operation, more options for collaboration. Mm-hmm. Because right now we make slings for Q, but the stitching on that is pretty simple, and that's kind of at our manufacturing limit. Mm-hmm. So this will really open it up to where we're able to do cooler things on the nylon front. Yeah. And then they offer tons of support, like office, sales, everything in that regard.
Yeah, at some point we need to talk about my idea for a sling that's very specific. We'll talk offline about it, but
okay.
You know, it's just occurring to me right now that you guys might be the one to you know, get it over the finish line because of this new connection. And if this pistol holster idea that we have works out, this is like the next follow-up. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where it's okay. Like, oh, this makes sense. So, awesome. All right. So now you guys are acquired by HSGI, and where are you guys going in like the next 5 years? Like, what's in your 5-year plan without giving away anything too strategic?
Yeah. I mean, really it's just growing each of the four brands. Mm-hmm. We have kind of plans for each and every one on how to grow them. And that's the goal, while obviously still making high quality custom products, and really just being able to better service our customers, give them more options, and continue to make high quality gear for our customers.
That's awesome. And now you recently took on a whole other type of acquisition, and it's more like you're acquired by someone else. You might have asked for her hand in marriage, but she's going to own you. You just got engaged. So
I did.
So what's the plan there? You guys are going to, you're still what, about a year out from the marriage?
Oh no, we're doing a semi short engagement. We're going to get married in June.
Oh, no kidding. That quick.
Yeah,
man. And does she carry?
Oh yeah, she does. I got her. She carries a Amtec Minuteman all the time. And then we're working on getting the 43X to where it's an all the time thing, but currently it's a most of the time thing.
Is that because she's trying to listen, like you've suggested it to her? Because I think everyone knows if you talk to your spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend or whoever it is, and you suggest something, they're gonna be like, oh, you're just being paranoid. But you get someone who's like an SME suggesting, it seems like it's the same message, but it's delivered from a different source, and suddenly it's all okay. So she's carrying a blade, we're working on the pistol, and she's clearly carrying both of those in products that you're making.
Correct.
Does she ever get tired of you coming home smelling like Kydex, or does she ever complain like you're getting Kydex dust all over the place or anything like that? Like, has there ever been an issue where she's like, you are such a Kydex nerd? Because I could just picture that happening.
Oh, she absolutely thinks that I'm a nerd. I usually try to be semi-clean when I come home. She hasn't complained about that yet. But yeah, she definitely thinks that I'm a nerd. But so far, at least from what she says, she does enjoy shooting. Mm-hmm. We're going to a training class or two training classes in the fall together. So hopefully that helps to kind of light that training fire and just build wanting to carry all the time.
Yeah. So we've talked about the things that you are making, and I think what we need to do before we sign off is we talk about the things that you maybe won't make? And what I mean by that is, like, are there any products that people have requested, like, hey, can you make one of these? And you're like, either it's not in our capability, we don't want to make it, or no, that's foolish. Like, are there any emails that kind of come to mind or requests where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they suggested this?
Oh man, we get those every day. There's usually not too many ridiculous ones. We've had a few ridiculous ones that are a little inappropriate, so I don't necessarily want to bring them up on here.
Understood.
I'll tell you about them offline. But usually it's just things that we don't have the bandwidth to do, or it requires some sort of operation that we just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully now with our new venture with High Speed Gear, that opens up tons more capability that we've never had before.
Also,
and then even with CompTech, mm-hmm. who's one of their companies, that helps us get into the competition space where we have never been before.
Also, at this point,
doing like the drop offset competition rigs, that's something we haven't really ever done. And that's all they do. They make an excellent competition setup. So that kind of allows us to get into that market as well.
You know, and I think what's interesting now is you can defer them, right? Or refer them to these mm-hmm. different companies. So it's like, hey, can you make an AR-15 pouch that's outside the waistband? And it's like, well, why don't you just look at the tacos, you know? Or,
yeah.
You know, you can, as you said, drop holsters. You know, you guys don't really do the drop holsters. They're more like on your belt or inside the waist belt or on your chest. But now you have access to hardware and other technologies and companies that are making holsters for that whole other market. You know, Casey, by the way, Casey Hildreth, I got to get a shout out to my boy Casey. We always call him like the Matthew McConaughey of Fieldcraft training. Handsome dude, you know, fifth group guy, solid dude. You know, he's excited to work with you. He actually just sent me all his preferences for a firearm holster. And he's like, oh, I want it in this color. And I'll tell you offline what some of the things he said are. But, you know, he's really excited. You know, so I'm excited to get those in the hands of our guys, because I swear by them. I've shot, you know, multiple courses with your stuff, and, you know, I love it. So now, where can people find you? And like, is there anything that, like, not just on social media, but where can people purchase your equipment? And if they have an idea for things, how can they get in touch with you?
Okay. BlackPointTactical.com, CruisialConcealment.com, High Speed Gear, CompTech. We're BP Tactical on Instagram. The DMs in there, I check at least every 2 days or so. So that's an easy way to get in contact with us. The Contact Us page on our Blackpoint site, that's being checked daily. All of those are good places to get in contact with us. We're also in several hundred dealers throughout the country. So maybe check out your local dealer. They might have some things in stock nearby.
And then have you experienced, because I'm just curious, have you experienced any of the Instagram weird censorship? Like, you're selling weapons. And it's like, nope, we are selling pieces of plastic with leather and metal clips and screws. I mean, have you experienced any of that?
Some, obviously not to the extent that y'all have.
Mm-hmm.
We, I don't know if the correct term is shadow banned, but it's to the point, or it's where you have to type in our exact tag for us to come up.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we're not allowed to advertise on Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah, the whole Facebook thing is ridiculous. Like, I have a friend who makes pocket organizers out of leather, right? Like, he makes what's called the Estella Daily Duo. And the Estella Daily Duo is it's basically a leather pouch that holds a Swiss Army knife and a ferro rod, right? Yellow Birch Outfitters, Jay Pulaski. And he posted, hey, here's a leather organizer. And then here's a nylon organizer that holds notebooks and pens and a flashlight. And he got banned from Facebook for posting that, because they're like, you're selling weapons. And he's like, there is absolutely nothing on my site that could be a weapon by most people's standards. I mean, put it in the hands of some of my SIOC buddies and it's a weapon. But my God, it's getting so ridiculous now, where they're so butthurt and sensitive over everything. And it just blows my mind. So I wish you all the best of luck with dealing with social media the way that we're dealing with it, and hopefully we're still online in the years to come.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, all the guys that I know who I've sent your way, you know, they're like, oh, should I tell them that, that Kevin Estella sent me? I'm like, you don't have to, you're going to get great service no matter what. But it seems like whenever someone does use that, that coupon code Estella, they get, they're like, man, I could not believe how awesome these guys are. So, you know, you must think very highly of me because you're taking care of my guys like rock stars. And I appreciate that because they're super happy with all your stuff. But, you know,
excellent.
Yeah. They're, and I'm excited for Casey to, you know, try out one of the holsters because he's a good dude. But, is there anything that you want to leave the audience with, leave the listener with, like kind of parting words about your holsters, why you think they're a great option, you know, anything in general?
Let's see. In terms of holsters, I mean, we try to make extremely comfortable, handcrafted holsters that are still fast, like they're built to fight with. In terms of parting words, I know you usually ask people for a quote.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go with a verse for you.
Fantastic.
2 Timothy 1:7. God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power, love, and discipline.
Do you say that the verse itself, like the numbers?
Yeah, 2 Timothy 1:7.
Outstanding. Man, I'm going to leave it at that because I don't think I can follow up with that one. Harvey, thank you so much for joining us today. Stay on after we sign off. We'll talk. But okay. Guys, if you're looking for really, really good options for the great outdoors, I mean, this is my number one recommendation. Go with Black Point. You're going to love them. All right, guys, this has been the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.